If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Okay, folks, thank you very much indeed for listening once again to Life on Planet Porky. Great to have you with us, and thank you as well. I have Leslie Ann with me, of course, as usual. Very nice as well, Leslie Ann, the responses from our last podcast, yes?
Oh, people have been great. Yes. Keep them coming.
Yeah, I say that as well. Now, one of the reasons it's always so much fun to work with you, Leslie Ann, is because I describe you as what you are, a rock chick writer extraordinaire, okay? And you've met many of the most famous people in the showbiz world and all that. So let me throw a name out to you, Naomi Campbell.
Oh, goodness. Now we're talking.
Have you had dealings with Naomi Campbell?
Oh, very much so.
Oh, I need to know all about this, because I'll tell you why, then, for the benefit of the listeners. Terrific story has just cropped up. I first saw it a few days ago, but it's resurfaced again. She's fallen out badly with the new editor of Vogue.
Yes, she has.
And they're not going to speak to each other again. I mean,
till next week.
Well, exactly. But, I mean, she's a consultant editor on the magazine.
Yeah, not anymore.
What sort of woman is Naomi Campbell?
I can tell you a few things. Years ago, I wrote a book about Naomi Campbell.
You did?
I did.
Wow.
Called The Rise and Rise of the Girl from Nowhere.
Okay, she's from Croydon. Croydon, is it?
Streatham,
that's
that
right.
Wonderful Kate Terry O'Neill picture on the front. Mm. And how this book came about, I was working for You magazine, the Mail on Sunday mag at the time.
Yes.
And the editor, the then editor, the late wonderful Nick Gordon, dispatched me to New York to do an interview, pre-arranged interview with Naomi at a cafe called Tea and Sympathy in the Village.
Right.
And she didn't turn
Greenwich
up.
Greenwich Village, yeah.
Yep. She didn't turn up. So I'm on the phone to the office, what do I do? And they had word from the PR.
Can you remember which day of the week it was? Was it a Sunday?
No idea. I think it was a Sunday, actually.
Yeah.
She didn't turn up. The PR said, she had to go to an appointment in Los Angeles. Yeah. Leslie Ann needs to go there. So I get another flight to Los Angeles, by which time I get there, she's moved on again.
Yeah.
So Nick says, I'll come home. It's ridiculous. We can't carry on this wild goose chase.
Sorry, you chased her from New York to L.A.?
Yes, came home.
Just for the benefit of our listeners, New York to L.A. is as far as London to New York, by the way.
Exactly. Yeah. So I get home, and there's a message on my answering machine, as we used to have in those days, saying, we've tracked her down. Mm. She's back in New York. She's agreed to see you at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning.
You told this story before.
There's a Concorde ticket waiting for you at Heathrow.
And you went out on Concorde.
So I went out on Concorde, and she came the next day. We did the interview. And all of this is kind of building in my mind, and I'm thinking, this young 20-something, unusually black model.
Yes.
You know, we didn't have many black models in those days.
Yes.
So she's the only ethnic supermodel at that time.
Yeah.
And she had a very colourful love life.
Yeah.
So a book is beginning to form in my mind, which I ended up writing, and which really didn't go down very well with her. And
did you have her permission?
Well, you don't need permission.
No, you don't
need
permission. But I mean, sometimes, like for instance, the famous Diana book with Andrew Morton. Yeah. You know,
they collaborated.
Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. That's what I mean. So, did you have any collaboration?
No, none at all. But anybody, just to clear up this query, anybody can write anything about anyone as long as it's true.
Oh, I wrote a book about Wayne Rooney, and it was called The Rune. What was it called?
The
Rooney Tunes. No, it was called Rooney Tunes.
Very good.
And what it was, instead of a straightforward biography, it was each chapter was, you know, really funny cartoons and all that, how he's going to be the first billionaire footballer, growing up with Colleen, you know what I mean, cartoons and stories like that. It was brilliant. Unfortunately, he broke his toe, didn't play in that year's World Cup finals for very long.
And the hook went. No, but this book happened. But then I started to get nuisance phone calls, anonymous messages on my answering machine. And then,
is this because you'd obviously been trying to contact Naomi's friends for information for your book?
And family members. Yeah.
I tracked, did I meet her mother?
I tracked down, well, yeah, we'll come to her mother.
Right, okay.
I tracked down her biological father,
right,
who was at the time serving 8 years in a prison in Norwich for shall we say, abuse of an underage girl.
Oh, dear.
And went round to see his mother, and she chased me down the road with a dustbin,
right,
going to whack me with it.
Wow.
Managed to get in the car in time.
A big woman.
And then the mother was sending me messages telling me to look under my car.
Yeah.
I had a Suzuki Jeep at the time.
Right.
And she knew that.
Right.
And she said, look under your Suzuki Jeep when you go out to pick
one
your
of these
little
mirrors
girl
on
up
a stick, you mean? Yeah.
So,
you know,
I was being terrorised.
Yeah, that's terrible. Did you report any of it to the police?
No, because it was a good story, and so I was sitting on it.
And you would have got even less cooperation from any members
exactly.
of the family.
Exactly. But then Naomi wrote a book called Swan.
Yep.
She didn't actually write it.
Yeah.
An author called Carolyn Upchurch,
who
was an agent, actually.
Yeah,
she wrote the book. She ghosted it for Naomi. And there was a character in this book who was clearly me.
Right.
Who was a stringy-haired, fat, Mancunian journalist, daughter of a sports writer called Lindy Jane Johnson.
Ah, right.
It doesn't take Einstein, right?
No.
Yeah.
I see.
So that's my dealings with Naomi.
Right, okay. So,
not a very nice person, I have to say.
You don't think she's a very nice person?
No.
I've never met her or spoken to her, but, you know, I've read all the things about her throwing phones at people and allegedly and all this kind of stuff. But the reason this has come out is that she's fallen out with a guy called Edward
Enningful.
Enningful, that's him.
It's a great name, isn't it?
It's a great
Enningful.
Name. First ever male and black. Both at the same time, but not to be entwined, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
Although they are. First male and first black editor of British Vogue. And apparently where it came from is that she was giving an acceptance speech at a fashion icon award at the Royal Albert Hall in London, OK?
Oh, she didn't thank him.
So she reads through a list of people she wanted to thank, and instead of thanking him, she thanks, who's the editor-in-chief over in America of, nuclear, what's her name?
Oh, no, Anna Wintour.
Anna Wintour, yeah. Anna Wintour.
Nuclear
Wintour. Nuclear Wintour.
Great
right,
nickname.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And the thing is that he said later, her name will never pass my lips again, because not only was he not mentioned, but he thought that it might have just been an oversight until he realised she was reading off one of these invisible cues, you know, that you can have in front of you, which the audience can't see, but you can.
So he wasn't even written on there.
He wasn't even written in for him.
Oh, well, diddums.
Yeah.
Diddums. Is he that sensitive?
And it says here, observers said the apparent slight towards Mr. Enninful may have been compounded by her reading her speech from an autocue, revealing it had been carefully composed rather than being off the cuff. And now, you know, they've fallen out with each other. I mean, what is it about that fashion world? Liz Jones, who we talked about in the last podcast, lives and works in that fashion world.
Well,
she tells stories
she
all the time.
She did. I
getting
think she's
sacked
kind of,
one day and then hired the next.
Yeah. It's like any other closed world, isn't it, fashion?
Yeah.
It's a very, very tiny industry.
Yeah.
And everybody knows each other.
Yeah.
And everybody's insecure.
Yes.
And models are surviving on cotton wool balls and orange peel.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's
yeah.
a weird old place.
Yeah,
and
it is.
These are not normal people.
No, they're not normal people. And sticking with fashion, by the way, and this always catches my eye, the name McCartney, right. Have you read this spat between Stella McCartney and Posh? So, Posh Spice, Mrs. David Beckham, okay, is running a fashion house, but so is Stella McCartney, and they've fallen out in a big way, apparently, because I think Posh tried to hire a nanny or something. What did you say? With parallel fashion careers and matching fortunes, country houses, famous friends, royal connections, you might imagine that Victoria Beckham and Stella McCartney have a lot in common. But they've each got four children. Excuse me, handsome husbands and regulars at the same London facialist.
Well, that'll do it. Never share your facialist.
No, exactly. Indeed, Stella and Posh were on chummy terms around 10 years ago when Stella's husband, Allardyceshire Willis, was hired as a style consultant to help rebrand David after his move to the US. Okay. But something's gone terribly wrong. The best of frenemies has arisen. And it came because they've had skirmishes in business and their private life. The two women have little in common socially. Stella's dearest and oldest friends are supermodels Kate Moss and Naomi Campbell, both of whom have well-reported antipathy towards Posh and her fashion aspirations. So there's a kind of war of personalities going on. Have you ever come across Stella McCartney?
I have met Stella McCartney. She's very normal, very down to earth, very charming.
Okay.
I think Victoria Beckham is up herself. She's arrogant.
Well, that's a bit harsh, isn't
she it? She thinks she's better than everybody else. That's just my opinion.
Yeah.
But if there's a nanny thing in this scenario, and I have personal experience of this.
Oh, yeah, go
I
on.
Had a nanny years ago for my son, Henry. He's now 22.
Right.
And this lovely girl came to stay with us and look after my son.
Yes.
My husband became ill and I had to take him to hospital. And when I came back, she was standing on the doorstep holding the baby in floods of tears.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what's the matter? What's the matter? Immediately thinking something happened to the baby.
Yeah.
And she was in hysterics. And she'd seen a framed photograph of my mother-in-law on the shelf in the drawing room.
Yeah.
And she recognised her. She knew who she was. And
who was she?
She was the mother of, obviously, my husband and his sister, who was her former employer.
Oh, golly.
And they had fallen out and she'd been kicked out.
Good God.
So she'd then, quite by chance, come to work for us.
Yeah.
But then there was a whole family kind of divide about it. And that side of the family was saying we had to sack her because how can we keep the nanny? Because she used to work for them.
Good
and
God.
We were saying, you can't sack a nanny because she used to work for your sister-in-law.
Good God.
It was a horrible experience.
This nanny thing is even more complicated.
It's very sensitive when it comes to nannies.
Yeah. In 2017, Stella's daughter, Riley, was invited to Harper, that's Posh's daughter.
Harper Beckham.
Yeah, that's
what,
right.
What a name that is.
Yeah, I know, yeah. To Harper Beckham's sixth birthday party, and it was at Buckingham Palace. David had managed to get some member of the royal family to let them have this birthday party at Buckingham Palace, okay?
She's that much of a princess.
Yeah, that's right. And Stella was annoyed that Riley, her daughter, was pictured in a group photo with Princess Eugenie. So it must have been Princess Eugenie and her sister, you know.
Who had it in their apartments or something.
Exactly, something like that, you know. Stella was extremely angry over this breach of her daughter's privacy, which she's always taken pains to protect. Then more recently, Victoria, this is where it comes in, as you know, the end of the relationship, offered a job to Stella's nanny, having heard on the Mummy Network that she was outstanding. Rumours had it that the nanny was not being paid at the elevated rate, which this kind of work usually commands, and so they kind of, you know...
Well, I get this. You know, this is like stealing someone's husband.
Yeah.
You do not go after the nanny.
Is that right?
You do not go after somebody else's cleaning lady.
Right.
You know, it just there are certain areas of territory. It sounds very pompous and up itself, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But there are certain lines across which you do not go.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know all that because I've had the same housekeeper lady now for 22 years.
Well, she's good then.
Yeah, she's great, you know.
But you see, I wouldn't ring her up behind your back and go, I've heard you're really good, come and work for me.
No, that would upset me. But
of
she wouldn't go anyway because she's got tremendous loyalty to me. She does everything. I mean, she's got keys to my house. She does my garden in the spring and in the autumn. You know, she puts it up in the spring and takes it down in the autumn, all that kind of stuff. She paints the fences around the edge of the roof garden. I've even had her up on the roof with
a
brush.
Have you really?
No. With a brush, rubbing the snow off the...
Oh, God, it gets worse.
No. Getting the snow off the Velux windows, you know, because it blocked out all my light.
Is that what they're calling it these days?
No. Now, come on, Leslie, for goodness sake, you know, these smutty jokes at my expense. I mean, you know, what are you on about? You know, everybody knows about the housekeeping lady. Name's Barbara, and
she does
shopping for me and all that kind of stuff, you know what I mean? So I'd be pretty lost without her, but... Also, you've got to remember that you're talking in telephone number wealth here. I think the Beckhams between them worth over 300 million. And, of course, Stella McCartney is backed, obviously, by her billionaire father, Paul, who is the world's first billionaire musician.
Yeah, we love Paul.
And
love Sir Paul.
Yeah, you told me about him. You met him up there in the Academy and all that. But what I don't quite understand about Posh is it seems to lose money year after year. It says here it has lost £42 million in 11 years, the equivalent of nearly £10,500 a day.
What's this brand, Beckham?
Whatever Posh's brand
is. Well, his
you know.
Stock has gone down, hasn't it?
Whose?
David's?
Well, yeah, but actually, in the last couple of days, there have been stories around that he signed some mega deal to back his football stadium in Miami in America, you know, which is going to be the new franchise for the club. So has his stock gone down? I mean, he was terribly upset, wasn't he, a couple of years back when he didn't get a knighthood? Because he's got an OBE or a CBE, hasn't he? Something like that, an MBE or something. And I think he felt after all the work he'd put into trying to win the World Cup for England, which was unsuccessful, then winning the Olympics for Great Britain, which, you know, which was successful, that he should have been rewarded. And I think he feels that he is due a bit of entitlement. But,
well, you know, as we know, you cannot coerce those things out of people.
Yes.
Reward for reward's sake.
Yes.
You can't go behind the backs of the powers that be and try and earn those things for yourself.
No, well,
you're not going to turn Her Majesty's head. No. She will gong you when she's ready.
I think you're absolutely right.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Right, OK, folks, you are listening to Planet Porky. Thank you for being with us today. Terrifically, I have, of course, Leslie Ann Jones with me in the studio. I've, you know, still getting onto this coronavirus thing, Leslie Ann. I've been, you know, researching everything. I told people a podcast or two ago, I walk around now with these antiseptic wipes and all that kind of stuff. But also, the way to minimise it in future from ever spreading is to replace all door handles and doorknobs in this country with brass. Or what's the other one? But you know, like these days, they're cheap metal and plastic. If you make them of brass and hang on, what is it? I've got it here.
Brass
and copper.
Yeah, you know why we got rid of those metals?
Why?
Because they need constant polishing.
Yes, they do.
Because they oxidise all the time.
Yes, they do.
So they need polish. You used to see the doormen on posh hotels, you know, always polishing plates and the door handles and so on.
I mean, that's one of the reasons why I so love New York, you know, Manhattan, because you go into some of the old bars
five-star
there.
Hotels there.
Say again.
The five-star hotel. A lot of brass around.
Exactly, but not just the five-star
hotel. Brass and brass.
The old bars. There's a bar in Manhattan called Billy's Gay 90s. Uh-huh. Nothing to do with gay people. It's been there like, you know, 70 or 80 years. And Smolensky's and places like that. And these are beautiful bars that are developed in the 1930s, you know, almost in the Prohibition era, when, you know, you couldn't serve drink. But they built these great bars called speakeasies in those days because they had private and secret rooms at the back, and as you entered you were told to speak easy because they didn't want the cops walking through the main, you know, sort of coffee area and finding people behind. But I just adore those. There was one called Maxwell's Plum we used to use in Midtown for brunch on a Sunday, and it was nothing but polished wood and polished brass and white linen cloths. Yeah, very labour-intensive.
You need to employ somebody just to polish the brass.
Yeah, sure.
That's why we moved away from that, but I get what you're saying.
It says here, brass and copper are known to be antibacterial and antiviral, so it's a shame that over the years so many doorknobs and rails have been replaced by other metals for economy and a modernist aesthetic look. Maybe it's time to revise the use of these metals in public places, reducing a risk not only in times of epidemics, but through the cold and flu seasons. I totally agree with that.
Bring back brass.
Bring back brass as well. Yeah, you're right. By the way, have you noticed the size of properties in this country is going down and down all the time? When I first started investing in property, maybe, I don't know, 25 years ago or something like that, you could get a one-bedroom flat in those days, right, which I rent out, and it had a completely separate bathroom, completely separate bedroom, completely separate lounge, you know, and for instance, you could come in through the front door, and a corridor would take you to those four rooms. Lounge, bedroom, loo, and kitchen. Okay, now you
bedsit.
Go in.
It's a bedsit.
It is a bedsit. Excuse me. And do you know what? A lot of the flats they're knocking up these days are done by the same sort of developers, i.e. I had a property in Orwell Quay in Suffolk, and it was quite nice. It was two bedroom, two bathrooms, and I lived there for about 6 months. Not lived there, but I used it as my second home for about 6 months, you know. And it was lovely. But the lounge, this is the first time it ever happened to me, only had an archway at the end of the lounge into the kitchen. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
So there was no door. And I thought, that's, you know, that's really odd that it's not separated by a door anymore, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The next one I bought about a year later was on the south coast, not Gosport, where I am now, but more Portsmouth. It was exactly the same construction techniques, exactly the same kitchen fittings, right? Exactly the same handles on the drawers, but the kitchen area wasn't even separated by an arch. It was the same layout. It'd been done by the same
open
design.
Plan.
But you just walk straight off the carpet onto tiles, and that was your, that, you
so
know.
So you like a separate kitchen?
Well, yes, because I don't. Because as you quite rightly say, when I'm sitting there now, my place in Gosport's the same. I've got a huge armchair, you know, a black leather armchair, and I'm looking at the telly. Got a big telly in the corner, and I've got the view across the harbour, and I've got on the left, I've got my, you know, my book cabinet with all my John Lennon books in, all that kind of stuff. But right behind me is a tiled area which morphs into the kitchen. And I like to have a separate room, but you just can't get them these days. And that's two bedrooms and two bathrooms,
by
the way.
I'm surprised that bothers you. Yeah. I have an open plan kitchen and living room.
Okay, yeah.
And it works really well.
Really?
Yeah.
Really, don't mind. Yeah. Okay, that's interesting. Because the one thing I can't stand is the Coronation Street style, as it used to be, walk in off the street into the lounge.
Yeah, I don't like that.
I mean, do you know, but that happens in New York apartments all the time.
Yeah.
Have you noticed?
Yeah.
You know, I had a mate there called Phil Finn, God rest his soul, gone now. But when I used to go up and see Phil, it always used to worry me that when Anne-Marie's wife opened the door, you walk straight into the lounge.
Yeah.
You
know? Terrace houses. I mean, my best friend from school lives in Salisbury.
Right.
We talk about her quite often, don't
okay,
we?
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And her place is a terraced Victorian house.
Yes.
You walk in off the street straight into the main room.
Right.
And yeah, it is a little odd, I would say. But
yes.
But she obviously doesn't find it so.
No, well, I suppose you get used to it in the end.
Mm.
The thing I can't
get
stand
get used to
is,
anything in the end.
I don't let anybody walk in off the street into my house without taking their shoes off outside in the corridor, you know.
And so, that's how you keep viruses down as well. First thing you do, come in, take your shoes off. Second thing you do, you wash your hands.
Yes.
For at least 20 seconds.
Yes.
My kids have done that all their lives.
Good. And they're used to
it. They know how to do it.
That used to worry me about Dallas. Because, you know, the family would come home and, you know, JR and Sue Ellen would have a row downstairs and she'd rush up the stairs and they'd go into their suite of rooms.
Take
and
your shoes off.
Exactly. They still have the cowboy boots on. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And I just couldn't
and
figure
Stetsons.
That out. Yeah, that's right.
But they
go
to bed in those.
Yeah, well, I couldn't work it out. Now, talking about not necessarily Texans, but do you have a view on short men?
Yeah.
Now, probably the most famous short man that's been around for the last year or two is John Bercow.
Uh-huh.
I think he's about 5'5" or something like that, Speaker of the House of Commons.
He's got a great big wife as well.
He's got a great big
wife.
She towers
above him. Towers
over him. What's her name? Sally?
Yeah.
I think it is,
Sally Bercow. Like Rod Stewart and Penny. Penny's way taller than Rod.
Cheers, yeah. I've been out with Rod, so to speak, been to football matches with him on his plane and all that. Terrific.
Oh, Ronnie Corbett, who was famously tiny. He had a very tall wife.
He did, and we did some work with Ronnie Corbett one day when it was one of those days when celebrities come into the trading centres in the city and they do all the trades and all the trades go off to charity that day, and he came and did that. But the reason I'm bringing this up is because I came across a recent report which said that referees who are short referees dish out more cards and more red cards and are more authoritative than tall referees, and it's put down to small man syndrome. Now,
there may well be something in that, some scientific explanation for that, because we know about small man syndrome.
No, I don't. What is it?
Well, so you're an editor on a newspaper.
I'm 5'8 3/4", that's average height.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
But say you're an editor, and I had a couple of small editors who were brutal people.
Not small and perfectly formed Donald Trelford.
We won't name names.
No.
Not Pixie.
Well, Donald Trelford's retired.
Not Pixie, no. But
years ago now.
And they would be more arrogant, more brutal, more vicious towards their staff.
Really?
Because they needed to big themselves up.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
That's amazing.
But I have to say that I don't date men who are shorter than I am.
Right.
It's quite hard to be shorter than me. I'm only 5'3".
Right.
But I have always liked a man I can literally look up to.
But you've always had Buffon hair, which
gives
you a bit more height.
I mean, Buffon in the 80s.
Well, no, within your dating days, so to speak.
Oh,
not that
what, you saying my dating days are over?
I'm not suggesting they're over, but I mean...
I'm still getting marriage proposals, mate.
Oh, I know you are, yeah, and that's very good. But what I'm saying
but
is...
they were too short.
You're not kind of on the market in the way you would have been as a Fleet Street rock chick, you know what I mean?
I'm not prowling, no, but if the right one came along...
Oh, right, OK. So
he'd have to be taller.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean, yeah.
Ambitions.
Sorry?
Ambitions?
Yeah.
What are you saying, that I'm out of the market now?
No, not at all.
Over the hill?
No,
far away?
I mean, listen, millions of people listen to this podcast. They'll be seeking your phone number as...
As long as they're taller than I am, they're in with a chance.
As we speak. People who I find amazing are jockeys. Have you ever met professional jockeys?
Yeah, like, I have. Who's that? Bruff Scott was a mate of my dad's. You know?
Oh, Bruff Scott was a tall jockey. Bruff Scott was a tall man.
He's still tinier than I am, though.
Bruff Scott? I don't think so.
Yeah, he is.
Is he?
I've seen him quite often.
I know Bruff very well, and we used to work together.
Nice guy.
I employed him as a broadcaster in the early days of TalkSport, and I got to write some books with him and that kind of stuff. I didn't think he was that. And I mean, the thing is, jockeys who are what you call National Hunt jockeys are taller than flat jockeys. But flat jockeys are tiny men.
They need to be, because they mustn't carry the weight.
Exactly. And you've got to remember that while a National Hunt jockey can gallop 4 miles if it's a Grand National, something like that, some of these flat races are like half a mile, three quarters of a mile, you know what I mean? And in no time at all, you're across the line, and you don't need a huge weight on your back to impede you. But we were at Newmarket once, and what's his name? His guy, Willie somebody? Oh, he was champion jockey about 3 times. He's a really nice guy, and he ended up doing commentary with Ms. Balding. What's her name?
Claire.
Claire Balding, that's
She's
right.
She's wonderful.
And he had to stand on the box next to her. He was that tiny.
Yeah.
And
she's a big girl.
She's a big girl, yeah. Physically, yeah. But they're great guys. But you see, people have always accused me of having short man syndrome because...
You're not short.
I know I'm not short, but the perfect height, I reckon, is 6 foot. Okay. I think that's a good height, you know what I mean?
My son is almost 6'4".
Your son?
Yeah.
My nephew is 6'4".
It's amazing.
I don't know where it's come from. Our family, my mum was average height for a little old lady.
Mm-hmm.
My dad was about my height. My two sisters are average height for a woman. And all of a sudden, my nephew Tom comes along and he just kept growing and growing and growing. And he's now 6'4", a giant of a boy.
I've got this extraordinary photo of my son with my mother and my sister at Christmas.
Yes.
And he's in the middle.
Yeah.
And Mum and Sam come up to about his waist. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. I've got a... funny enough, for Christmas, my sister gave me a new family picture because, you know, I don't live in Bournemouth where they live and I like to have a... And it's Tom, my nephew, 6'4". And Karen, my niece, who's about 5'5".
Mm.
It's the most amazing picture, honestly, because it looks like Tom is twice the size of Karen. And perspective of the picture shows Tom in front with his arm around Karen. It's just such a lovely picture, you know.
I love
it. I can't believe they've both got the same mother.
No, I'm very proud of myself. I'm proud of all my kids.
Tom would have made a great weatherman because he went and studied geography at Newcastle, you know. And he would have been a great weatherman. But he had ambitions.
Who is that guy at the weatherman? Tom, is the weatherman. A weatherman. There was a song, wasn't there?
Was
there?
I don't know.
Indie groups did a song. Tom Utley or something.
Tom, I don't know.
He's a weatherman. A weatherman.
I'm not sure of that. Listen, I tell you what I want to talk to you about. Talking about students and all that kind of stuff. Have you seen that for the first time now, because they realise how ridiculous it is, that universities are scrapping some of these more ridiculous schemes, including how to saddle a horse.
Yeah,
you can get a degree in it.
Yeah, quite right.
I mean,
right.
How ridiculous
quite
is that?
Right. Yeah, but, okay, here's something controversial.
Yeah.
Given that you love the Beatles.
Yes.
You can take a degree in the Beatles' music. Do
worthwhile.
You approve of that?
Very worthwhile.
Okay.
It's very worthwhile because they're part of the cultural history of this country, 20th century onwards,
okay,
without
fair enough.
A shadow of a doubt.
So my daughter is reading currently a very traditional subject, English.
Great.
Exeter University.
Yep.
People will say, well, what kind of a job can you get with that? Well, it's not about the subject you have the degree in.
Yes.
It's about the fact that you have demonstrated self-discipline, ability to research, to work under your own steam, and to organise your own education. information, basically. Because you don't get very much input. You get like one seminar a week.
Yeah, but you can still waste your life contact. If you do the wrong degree.
I think that the problem, the confusion has arisen because in the old days we had universities and polytechnics.
Yes, that's right.
And at polytechnics you could study vocational courses like photography or gardening or, you know, as you say, saddling a horse. But that would be a vocational subject. And then you would have your academic subjects like mathematics, the sciences, English or French or whatever it was. But now, because we no longer have universities, and those are all, polytechnics are all universities now,
The
whole thing has got blurred. It needs to go back.
I totally agree.
It needs to be segregated
also,
again.
Do you know that universities are huge business in this country now?
Of course.
Particularly, I mean, the China coronavirus has got them all terrified that the children are going to be recalled to China, won't be able to stay here, and all this kind of stuff. But I've seen this story two or three times now. Crammed universities run out of lecture space. University students have had to watch lectures online or in overflow rooms because lecture theatres are so overcrowded with the oversubscription of pupils after the rapid expansion in the number of undergraduates. I mean, what on earth's going on there?
It has gone mad. But I will say something contentious, which is, you know, the average university degree course takes 3 years.
Yeah.
If they didn't spread it out and insist they can only have a seminar a week and one tutorial a week and all of that, you could cram that degree course into 1 year. It doesn't need to take 3 years.
I would have said two. Because you're absolutely right. I went to the University of the Trent. I think we had one seminar, four lectures and something else, you know, you met somebody on a one-to-one. That was the total amount of work I had to do in 1 week. And
You did a lot then, because they don't get that now.
Really?
No.
And it was so little, I didn't bother doing any. I couldn't really be bothered to go in.
And they have to pay for it now.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, actually, what is it we're paying for here?
Yeah. I got a maximum grant. Organised by my old fella, obviously, you know, through his accountant, the taxman, all that kind of stuff. And I just wasted it. It was all spent after 3 weeks of the first term.
And they also spend very much time in bed.
Yeah, that's right, they do, yeah. And I had to spend a lot of time working in a pub to make up my money because I didn't have any.
I worked at Marks and Spencer's in the food department.
Excellent, well done. Where was that?
In Bromley.
Bromley, in Kent.
But I was at college in London. Actually, Westminster University.
Oh, yeah. Very good. What is your daughter going to do when she qualifies?
So she's going to take a year out.
That's a mistake.
No.
The gap year is a mistake.
No. A gap year after. She's almost finished her degree.
Yeah.
The gap year, you've made a mistake here, Mike.
Yeah, yeah.
The gap year comes before they get to university.
Oh, yeah, of course it does. Yeah, yeah.
So she's going to take a year to work.
Yes.
And earn the money to pay for herself to do a master's degree.
Right.
And then she wants to be a theatre director.
Why can't she be a theatre director with one degree? And then she gets into the workplace quicker.
Because nowadays, but nowadays the normal degree is so devalued by the fact that everybody has one that to take the step up and to be better than everybody else, you've got to take a master's as well.
Well, good for her, and I hope it all works out.
Thank you.
Right, OK, that's brought us to the end of another Life on Planet Porky podcast. Thank you very much indeed, Leslie Ann.
My pleasure.
People getting in touch all the time on planetporkypod@gmail.com.
Hooray.
Where do they contact you?
On Twitter at LAJWriter.
LAJWriter. And I am Mike Parry 8. And more news about a live show coming up in April. We'll be with you folks very soon indeed. Thank you very much indeed. And listening again. I've had the same housekeeper lady now for 22 years.
Well, she's good then.
Yeah, she's great, you know.
But you see, I wouldn't ring her up behind your back and go, I've heard you're really good, come and work for me.
No, that would upset me. But
of
she wouldn't go anyway because she's got tremendous loyalty to me. She does everything. I mean, she's got keys to my house. She does my garden in the spring and in the autumn. You know, she puts it up in the spring and takes it down in the autumn, all that kind of stuff. She paints the fences around the edge of the roof garden. I've even had her up on the roof with
Have
a brush.
Really?
No. With a brush, rubbing the snow off the...
Oh, God, it gets worse.
No. Getting the snow off the Velux windows, you know, because it blocked out all my light.
Is that what they're calling it these
days? No. Now, come on, Leslie Ann, for goodness sake, you know, these smutty jokes at my expense. I mean, you know, what are you on about? You know, everybody knows about the housekeeping lady. Her name's Barbara, and
she does
shopping for me and all that kind of stuff, you know what I mean? you're not kind of on the market in the way you would have been as a Fleet Street rock chick. You
I'm
know
not
what I mean?
Prowling, no, yeah, yeah, but if no. the right one came along.
Yeah. Oh, right, okay.
He'd have to be taller.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean, yeah. So
ambitions.
Sorry?
Ambitions?
Yeah.
What are you saying? That I'm out of the market now?
No, not at all.
Over the hill?
No, no.
Far away?
Listen, millions of people listen to this podcast. They'll be seeking your phone number
as long as they're taller than I am, they're in with a chance.
As we speak. People have always accused me of having short man syndrome because...
You're not short.
I know I'm not short.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.